Welcome to Dig, a podcast about creativity and some other things. I'm your host, Yossi Salek, and on today's episode, I'm talking to Heather Fortune. Heather is a musician, writer, and visual artist, and also my former roommate. She currently makes music for a solo project under her own name, and for the last 9 years, helmed the band Wax Idols. This year, she put out her first book of poetry called Waiting in Various Lines. She also wrote the catchy theme music for this little old podcast. In this episode, we talk about what to do when inspiration strikes at inconvenient times, how implementing a daily schedule can improve your creativity, the idea of non-commercial art, and whether it's more embarrassing to write poetry or to do improv. Personally, I think doing a podcast beats them both. I don't drop my first, my therapist says, until 18 minutes in, but there is a mention of the Arby's hat within 30 seconds of this interview starting. As always, there's a lightning round of things Heather is digging right now. Here's the interview. Heather, you are a woman that wears many hats creatively.
You can't, but not the Arby's hat.
You cannot laugh the whole time because that is unacceptable. You need to take this seriously. Okay. You're, primarily a musician.
See.
But you're also a poet. You are a painter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Am I missing a thing? I wanted the list to be longer, but now I think I tapped out.
Primarily.
You're a producer.
Yes. I just that's another one.
Enveloped that into musician.
I'm a booking agent.
Sure.
For myself. For our band. What else do I do? I have a record label.
You run a record label. So you do a lot of things.
I do a lot of things.
In terms of the creative things that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's start with music, since that's the primary. When you sit down to start a song, like, what is it that usually motivates you to start the song? Like, do you pick up the guitar and you start, like, kind of playing around and getting, like, a melody? Do you have lyrics that you've written that you want to try to set to music? Is it just, like, more esoteric where there's an idea that you have that you're like, I need to express this through a song?
I think it varies.
In song, as they say.
In song. It varies. It varies case to case. There are times when I just want to play guitar and then just for the sake of it. I don't have an intention to write anything. I just feel like playing.
You just want to shred.
I just want to shred. You know, I just want to, you know, rip a ripping solo or something. And then through just playing, a song kind of just finds me rather than me finding it. Does that make sense?
Kind of. Like, what are you playing when you're just playing guitar in your room? Like, you're just playing, like,
you know,
Freebird, and then it just, like, you're like, oh, you know what? Like, this is a cool chord progression.
No, true story about me. I don't really know how to play other people's songs.
You know how to play Under the Bridge, and I have evidence of that in an interview.
That actually is the first song I technically learned when I was trying to learn how to play guitar. I just wanted to learn how to play the intro, you know, to Under the Bridge.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to inform you that there's a twist that this is actually a Red Hot Chili Peppers fan appreciation podcast.
Oh,
and welcome.
Shit. What I got, you gotta get it, put it in you. Willing with the villain. Okay, anyway.
Can you play bass like Flea?
No, I cannot slap at the bass.
Okay.
No, I never figured out how to do that. But
so you're playing guitar.
So I'm playing guitar.
In your bedroom.
In my bedroom or in the living room or wherever, in my little garage studio that I have now at my house. And usually I'll just, you know, start playing chords. I like to put my guitar in open tunings when I'm just feeling experimental or when I just want to play. Because open tunings, you can just kind of flop around and you don't have to really play specific chord shapes or stick to certain scales. You can kind of, everything just kind of sounds good within reason. So I'll just be playing. And then if I just happen upon a pattern or something that appeals to me or feels good, then sometimes I'll just start humming along and then a song will kind of happen. There are other times when I will have lyrics written first that I'm like, these would be really good song lyrics. And then I kind of put a song to it. There are times where I've written songs just based on drum beats that are stuck in my head or that I hear in my head and that I just want to have a song that has a particular groove, if you will.
like a funky groove,
you know, and then I have to call someone to slap the bass for me, you know. naturally. But
who's your like go-to slap the bass? Who's like in
my
your
go-to
speed
bass
dial
slapper?
Bass slap?
My go-to bass slapper. It's Flea. We're good friends. Just kidding. Sorry, that's weird. If
Shout
he hear,
out
what
Flea.
If he heard this and he's like, I don't know who this person is. It's so weird.
I mean, what if he did? Hey, Flea, come on the pod.
Flea seems really cool. So, anywho, yeah, it happens in a myriad of ways. Sometimes a song, I'll come up with a song, like a whole song in my head. Like I'll hear all the things. Songwriting is a particularly strange form of creativity, I think. There are so many different ways to approach it. Some people are really methodic about it, and they sit down and they go to work, you know? And other people just get flashes of inspiration and ideas and they just hits them all at once.
This is a good question. Speaking of flashes of inspiration, I have a thing where I'll sit down to write and literally nothing will come for many hours and I will just sit and cry and then I'll look at the internet and then I'll check all my horoscopes and then I'll eat a bunch of stuff and then I'll come back and then I'll write a sentence. But then, you know, I'll call it quits for the day. I'll have two sentences. Then I'll be just driving on like an hour-long drive. And then the muse touches my forehead and just a flood.
What does the muse look like?
No, it's not. She's see-through. She's like a ghostly figure. Can't really, no facial expressions.
Doesn't that make you get, like, wouldn't that cause like a car crash or something?
I don't like, I said she touched my forehead. Did I say I'm looking at her? Am I making eye contact? Are
we
hands? No, I'm still driving. So my point is that, like, I have to, like, grab my phone really quick and, like, make voice notes. Or, like, it'll happen when I'm, like, running or just, you know, inopportune times. What do you do? Like, well, A, does that happen to you?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. In the shower all the time.
Sure. Like, all the time. All the times where you're – I guess it's probably because your mind is kind of free in the sense that it's not really focused on something.
Yeah, you're more open to the transmissions – To get real esoteric on you, but yeah.
But the my question is actually more of a practical one. Do you have like a methodology or a system of how do you store those ideas? How do you record them? How do you organize them? Do you organize them?
Well, okay, so voice notes were my thing, obviously, for a long time with the iPhones. Before that, I would just write things down in a weird code that I sort of invented for myself that nobody else could ever read. Yeah. And I still do that sometimes. But actually, there's this app that a bunch of musicians made. I think it's affiliated with the record label Top Shelf Records or something. I can't remember.
Okay.
It's called Scratch Track. And it's basically like What's that app for like for work things where it's like a bunch of different people can be all in one? It's like Google Docs, but an app. What's it called? Slack. It's like Slack for music.
Okay.
So you start a group and, you know, you can add your bandmates or your collaborators or whatever. And then you, if you have an idea, you can just record it and you can add like a very minimal layer of effects. You can put like reverb on the recorder. You can, you know, change certain aspects of it and then you upload it to the group and then everyone can access it and then they can add things to it or whatever. It's pretty cool. So I've been using that for when those things happen, when I suddenly am gripped with an idea.
Would you go straight to like the group chat, as it were, the group app chat with your ideas? Like, is that where they directly go? They don't go through like a 7, you know, screen process like mine do before anyone sees them?
It depends. It depends on how good the idea, like how strongly I feel about it. If it's just kind of a little thing like, oh, this might be cool, then usually I'll just stick to a voice note. Or if a computer's nearby, I'll just pop open like a Logic file or something and just try and record something quickly. But
do you remember that you've had these ideas? Like, do you have a system for like you come back to them at a certain time? Or
I'll stop whatever the hell I'm doing and find some way to write it down or record it. If I'm driving, I'll pull over. If I'm in the shower, I'll jump out, like, or I'll just start humming it over and over and over again until I'm out of the shower or until I get, you know, I'll try and keep it in my mind so I don't forget. Because after you, when you do creative work for so long, it would be foolish to take it for granted. I think you would agree, you know, because when you want an idea and it's not there, and then you can't remember the idea you did have that was great, then you're really kicking yourself.
It's like, I'm falling asleep. It's 9:30 p.m. It's very late. And I just don't want to get up and go get my computer and write stuff down.
All you got to do is grab your phone.
No. Siri doesn't understand what I'm saying when I try to record the voice.
Siri is useless.
And they truly come out vastly differently than I imagined what my thought was.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to follow the thread to completion. It's definitely not an easy thing to do.
I mean, do you have a practice in general? Like, do you have like a daily scheduled practice to make stuff, to make music, to make art?
No, not specifically. I have a daily schedule that I set for myself when I don't have to be at day jobs or be somewhere else, where I have to make sure that I am working on something creative in some capacity for at least 2 hours. But I don't make a schedule in advance of what that's going to be, because I've found that when I try to be too rigid or controlling about anticipating how I'm going to create, then it just kind of blocks the whole system. So I just try to make sure that I have time at as many days a week as possible to where I can just be free to only sit down and paint or write for a while or play guitar or go through old demos and see if there's any kernels of stuff that's good that I want to work on and develop more or whatever.
You just have 2 hours of creativity.
At least. And usually if I get going and it gets rolling, then, you know, I'll be in a K-hole for the rest of the day doing it. But sometimes, you know, like you were saying about the writing and, you know, just sitting there, you get two sentences and that's it. Yeah. But it's better than nothing.
You have to eat snacks. Is it hard as someone that does multiple mediums, and I guess more specifically that you write and you write music, how do you decide what's a poem and what's song lyrics?
This is a great question, because I went through this when I was in the last kind of cycle of creative things that I released. So with the last Wax Idols record, American Tragic, I was writing that at the same time that I was amassing a volume of poetry that later became Waiting in Various Lines, the collection that I released earlier this year. And there were a lot of crossover themes, and, you know, I was dealing with a lot of going through a divorce. I was, you know, so it was hard for me to sort through that, which things were belonged where. And I don't really know how I did it. Like, for example, the song Lonely You, that was originally a poem, a standalone poem that was very, it was very like kind of frilly and old fashioned, like, I don't know, very kind of, it was kind of Oscar Wildean in form, you know, just very flowery and kind of like maudlin British style. And I was proud of it, of it poetically, but it just kind of seemed a bit
much
for just a standalone poem. But as lyrics, it worked really well if I trimmed some of the flowery stuff and just got, you know, trimmed it down to its bare essentials. And then I found that it naturally fit into this song I had kind of been working on in my mind. And it was like perfect. It was meant to be. But then when it came time for me to finish compiling and editing that poetry collection, I had to, you know, decide, am I going to let the original form of this, of that, what became that song, live as a poem too? Ultimately, I decided no. But I had to do that a lot through that stuff. And I don't really have a method. I'm still kind of new to that, because that was my first volume of poetry. So I've been writing poems since I was a kid, but I haven't been writing poems for public consumption for very long. So that's kind of a new thing that I'm finding out about as I go.
Do you approach it differently, writing poetry and writing lyrics?
No, not at first. I just write. I just start writing. I try to just if I have to write, I just write and I let it be whatever it's going to be. And I think after it's done, I can usually tell. Like if I'm reading something back and it feels incomplete, but not because words are missing, then to me that kind of signals that it needs to be the feeling needs to be delivered for in a more complex way. So, i.e., adding music or putting it into music. But if I read something back and it feels complete and like it feels like the emotion or the moment in time or the feeling or whatever is fully represented and clear, then I don't want to do anything else to it. I don't want to touch it. And then it's just a poem.
It's just a flowery dress of a poem.
It's just a poem.
Just hang it on the hanger, throw it in the closet.
I found that the poems that I actually like the most and that made it into that volume that people that feel the most authentic to me are the ones that are not flowery at all. They're like really profane.
Do you think it's more embarrassing to write poetry or do improv? I'm just kidding. No offense to anyone that writes poetry or does improv.
I've never done improv. I don't know.
Poetry and
why don't you
tell
me? You've done both.
No comment. Let's talk. Okay, so I was reading this interview with the writer Jenny Zhang, actually on The Creative Independent. Shout out The Creative Independent, the best website ever.
True.
And she was talking about how in order to be a writer, you kind of need this like very incredibly high level of delusion because I think the gist of what she was saying is that like it keeps you writing and it keeps you believing that you should put it in the world, that you want to share that in the world, and there's some delusion necessary there. Do you think that applies? I mean, does that resonate with you? Do you think that applies to all art?
It resonates with me.
Are you delusional? Is what I'm asking.
Probably. I think the trick about being delusional is that you don't know you're delusional. If you knew you were delusional, then you wouldn't be delusional, right? So I think I'm delusional, but I probably am not because I feel like I am. Self-awareness does not usually go hand in hand with delusion.
I'm not a mental health professional. I don't know.
Well, I feel like that's how I feel about it. So am I delusional? Maybe.
Well, I guess, I guess this leads into maybe a more specific question because sometimes when I sit down to write something, I get really overwhelmed by the thought of all of the good writing that exists in the world. And I feel like, who asked for mine? No one asked for this.
But no one asked for theirs either.
Well, yes, exactly. And like, but it's kind of hard to remember that. And
totally.
I don't know how, like, if that is something that you grapple with, like, how do you deal with that?
I try not to deal with it. I try to push it. I try to keep it away from me because then I won't ever do anything. Sure. And I'll be immobilized and I'll just,
go to sleep.
Go work at Target.
9:30 p.m. without writing.
Not that there's anything wrong with working at Target, but you know what I'm saying?
There's nothing wrong with doing improv, writing poetry, or working at Target.
All things
if you do all three, get in touch. I would like to have you on the podcast.
Yes, all things are fine. But you know what I mean? I would just stop. I would just give up. Because yeah, I think about that stuff, but I try to just, when I have those thoughts, just be like, what is the point of having these thoughts? Because like I said, you know, nobody asked for anybody's stuff really, unless you were commissioned in like medieval court,
the
royal courts
to
do a portrait or something,
King Henry.
But for the most part, you know, art is, people are compelled to create because they just feel like they have to, and nobody is like desperately asking them, please create this like random, you know, triptych or like, you know, whatever.
I feel like so much of that anxiety comes from the space between the compulsion and then the paralysis of, who wants, no one cares, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
But then you're still compelled. So you're just like, wah, you know, all the time.
Yeah, it is a conundrum for sure. I think all artists struggle with that.
My therapist said something, shout out to therapy. Mm-hmm. She said something that was really helpful to me about that. When I expressed to her for like, I don't know, the fourth year in a row that I was like, I don't know. Why would I do that? Why would I write something? I'm suck at everything. She was like, you know, you're not the worst. We can agree on that. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll give you that. I'm not the worst.
Yeah, I'll throw like, my vote in the ring there and you not being the worst.
And she was like, yeah, and you're probably not the best either. And I was like, wow, rude. But no, I was like, yeah, also correct. And she was like, there's a lot of real estate in between those two things. Like, why can't you go and have some of that real estate? And that's
That's a clever way of putting it.
It's been pretty helpful because it's like, yeah, you're not going to be the best mm-hmm. and you're probably not the worst. So like go forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get your, you know, get your real estate.
I think that's a great, that's a very good therapy thing to say.
I like her.
I like her too.
Shout out Athena.
Athena.
What do you do when you're blocked? What do you do when you feel completely creatively blocked and you're like, oh, my album needs to be done and I need three more songs and I don't have three more songs in me? What happens?
Over the years, I've learned that the best thing to do is literally anything else. Like, just stop. Just stop working on that and do anything else. Cook a meal, go for a walk, go to a movie, watch TV, go hang out with some friends, anything other than performing some kind of creative task where you feel like your entire being and self-worth is on the line, which is often what it feels like.
It does feel like that, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. But in the past, I did not yet have those kernels of wisdom. And so I would drive myself absolutely insane and everyone around me absolutely insane. And it was not fun.
I would think based on what you've told me, you would just shower a lot.
I do shower a lot, though, is a thing. I'm like a two baths a day kind of bitch. That's something I said on Twitter. It's a reused joke. I can't lie. But it's a
true bummer.
It's
ejected from the pod.
But it's true, though. It's so true. I do take a – that is legitimately something I do. When I feel really blocked or stressed out or like I can't complete a task, I will go take a shower or get in the bath because the white noise of running water puts me into – kind of resets my brain, which just helps me calm down in general. And then, yeah, I do often get a lot of creative ideas while I'm in water settings. So you're making a funny joke, but actually it's true.
Humor is most effective when it taps into the truth.
Wow.
I learned that in improv class.
Wow.
That's not true. I did not learn that in improv class. And I don't even know if it's true in general. Heather.
Yes.
Do you listen to music while you're in the cycle of writing music?
Yes. And anyone who says that they don't is full of shit.
Okay. We're not talking about all these other people and their lives. We're focusing on you and your process.
Well, you know, the reason I react that way is because this question gets asked all the time in interviews and in things of artists or people especially during album cycles. And they always say the same thing. No, I tried to tune everything out and only focus on my own.
Maybe they just listen to like a 12-hour CD of Prairie Home Companion. Like you don't know what they do. You're not at their house.
I mean, it's just silliness. Yes, I totally do. I usually listen to things that are just like cornerstones for me, like music,
such as
like Prince or Bruce Springsteen, you know, or like The Cure or something. Music that I've always listened to that I connect with on a deep level, identity level, that's just so deeply ingrained into my psyche that it has already influenced me in a million ways. And so I'm not at risk of being overly influenced by it.
Right.
It's like just a part of me.
It's like someone who's really familiar to you, so you don't really notice their face anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll do that just to remind myself of like where I come from, what great music is, like how freeing it is, how simple it can be. And all the things that I love about it, you know, especially from a production standpoint, you know, I like to go back and listen to things that feel timeless to me and then break it down and find what about this recording or this particular song, what makes it so timeless? Like, what are the things that I respond to the most? Is it the way the snare sounds, you know, is it the way the vocals are multi-tracked? Is it, what are the things that are making me have like the buzzy feelings when I hear it, you know, and I'll keep track of those things. And then when I get to that stage in the process of making my records, I then see how those things can apply to our work. You know, what kinds of classic techniques or things I've picked up through listening to and absorbing all this music my whole life would best serve this particular song, you know?
But do you consciously shy away from new music or other kinds of music?
No. I like while we were working on Happy Ending, I listened to Vince Staples' Big Fish Theory a lot. I don't know why. I just really like that record. It came out last year while and we're working on this new record, and I listened to it quite often. And that was a new record. And what else did I listen to that came out?
I'm so sorry, but like I need to double check because I'm pretty sure Big Fish Theory is also a Dave Matthews Band song. And what a kismet that would be right now, because I'm in a deep Dave Matthews Band. I want to say like life phase, like not just like a fandom phase, but there's just something going on with me and Dave Matthews right now that's really special.
I would love to hear more about that. You should tell me all about it.
Yeah, no, it's Big Eyed Fish. Anyways, keep going.
Yeah, the answer is yes, I do listen to other music because I'm always, music is my favorite thing in the whole world and aww, it always has been. So I'm always listening to music or thinking about music or hearing music in my head in some capacity.
Have you ever gotten so burnt out on music? And you know what? I'm going to say it, the music industry, that you've just wanted to throw the towel in and walk away from the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
don't,
I definitely have.
Don't be that person.
Why? The Kool-Aid Man? What's wrong with the Kool-Aid Man? God. I absolutely have felt that way.
Was it more creative burnout or was it more industry burnout? Was it a combination?
Oh, it's happened so many different times for different reasons. There have been times where I have felt creatively like I have nothing left to offer and I'm done and I'll never write a song again or do anything again and I'm over and I'm broken. It's very dramatic, but it's true. I've felt that way several times in my life.
But aren't there so many songs about exactly that?
Oh yeah, totally. Totally. But yes, truthfully, I have felt that way. And also, music industry is a Russian roulette, crazy place where there nothing really makes sense, and up is down, and down is up, etc. And so that can be very frustrating and difficult to navigate. And I think, especially for artists, it's difficult to reconcile with the fact that you in order to survive as an artist and thrive, you are sort of forced to cooperate with this capitalistic system that's built around the work that you do, mm-hmm, that really has nothing to do with your work, actually, you know?
Yeah.
And it can throw, for the more existential among us, it can be a real shitstorm to deal with.
Well, isn't it an option to make music outside of the system? Like, would you still make music if it had nothing to do with the industry, it didn't ever make any money, and it was just something you did?
Yes, because I was doing it before I ever thought anyone would ever pay attention or care. And so I know that I would, because I did and I was doing it. Would I still do it now if I decided to never again like engage with the public or release anything in any kind of real
or just way? Even make money?
Oh yeah, I mean I barely make money off of music as is, and I'm 10 years in, so I definitely would do it just with or without the money. That's for sure. I mean, what money?
Wow, it's getting really real. Well, I mean, I guess that what I'm thinking about right now is that I think we, our generation, and I'm putting us in the same generation, which we roughly are, I think our generation was sold sort of this dream, and not only a dream, like almost like a mandate for the creatives in it to, you have, like, you can make it doing your art. Like, that's what you should do for a living. You should do your art for a living. And like, that's great for some people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible for some people, or it's not even desirable for some people. And I think there's a tendency for people to look down on artists who don't make a living from their art, mm-hmm, as if their art isn't as valid, as if you can't just go to your day job and make art on the side, like Henry Darger style. Like,
yeah,
you know?
I agree.
That was a weird example.
Henry Darger. That's a great example. But I love Henry Darger. So that was a wild card to throw out there and a really good one.
I mean, it's like questionable pedophilia. Whatever. The point is that the man was a janitor for 100 years and every day he came home in a closet and made art. And it was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, he made art. He didn't make it his life. It is such a weird example. I don't know why that's the only one I can think of.
I really enjoy that that's the one that came out of your
But do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course I do. And I agree that that is something that happens where people get looked down on if their art isn't as easily commodified as other people's art. And I think that's sad and unfair and shitty. I think that's perfectly fine and great. I know lots of artists who don't engage in the commercialization of their work really at all. They'll occasionally show things somewhere or occasionally – you know, make a CD of music and give it to some friends and it's fantastic stuff. And they just really don't have a desire to push themselves as artists into the public spotlight in any way. And I think that's totally noble and great. I think it just depends on the person and what kind of lifestyle you want to live and how it just depends person to person. I personally never intended on having this life. I wanted to be a producer. I didn't, which had nothing to do with public interaction.
Music producer.
Yeah. I wanted to be a behind, you know, the wizard behind the curtain, so to speak. Like that was my ambition. And I truly don't even know how I ended up doing this instead. I really don't. I mean, there certainly must have been something innate in me that wanted a certain kind of attention or to have some kind of larger impact on people or on the world, because otherwise why else would I have been so compelled to go in this direction?
Right.
But it wasn't something I was aware of or ever like anticipated happening when I was younger and starting out. I wanted to be a part of making music, but I didn't want to be like the sort of lightning rod face of a project, you know?
Well, how did it happen that you crossed over?
I just started writing songs, and then slowly, you know, a roommate would hear me playing them, and then, you know, I'd be like, oh, they'd be like, oh, this is good. And then I would be like, really? And then I would play it for a friend, and they would say it was good. And then, oh, you should just sing some songs at the coffee shop we work at while we're working to entertain us. And so I would start doing that.
Shout out early 2000s.
So true. And in Chicago, that's where it started. And then my friends would start coming and hanging out and be like, play that song you wrote that we like, or, you know, and it just happened. And I found that I got a lot of joy out of performing.
Did you also live in your car? Because I feel like you just completely ripped off Jules' life story and told it back to me.
I have not ever lived in my car, but I've been close.
And when did you return back to producing? Because there must have been like some period of time in between.
When I started recording music,
right.
And I realized, oh, I know how to do this because I've been doing it, been going to school and interning and whatever. So then I just started self-producing my own stuff, and I found that to be very fulfilling. And then as I went on and started doing Wax Idols, I realized I wanted to be able to focus more on performing and not having to engineer everything also. So I started working with Monty Vallier at Ruminator Audio. So that, and him, he and I like co-produce, but he engineers, he mans the machines. So that way I, you know, don't have to grow six arms.
Last year you produced, maybe it was 2 years ago. I don't remember.
It was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. You produced an album for your friend,
mm-hmm.
Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Dustin. Was that the first time that you had produced music that wasn't your own?
Yep.
And yeah. How was the experience different?
It was so different. It was way more relaxing. It was great. I loved it. I found it to be more fulfilling actually than producing my own music because it felt egoless. It wasn't about me. It was about trying to bring somebody else's vision to life and trying to help somebody else achieve, something that they wanted for themselves. And I was just basically being utilized as a tool to help them. And that made me feel really useful and purposeful and like I was really giving something that and that freely that was just wasn't about me, you know, and that was a very gratifying experience.
Do you feel like you learned anything from the process that you brought back to your own music?
Yeah, it helped me remember what I wanted to do in the first place, which was to be a producer. And it helped me kind of see, you know, like kind of man in the mirror style thing, like from being in this other position where I was watching an artist go through all of the sort of turmoil and torment and also like great, you know, breakthroughs and shining moments of making an album that they've written that's their like blood and sweat and tears and all that. And not being emotionally invested in it myself, but like seeing what they were going through from that other perspective made me a little more compassionate toward myself while going into the album I started working on next with Wax Idols, which made the process a lot easier for me. That's definitely something that changed.
And you plan on doing more production work for outside of Wax Idols music?
Yeah, I would love to. If anyone wants me,
guys, hit up Heather
hit me
Fortune.
Up. Hit
She's
me
for hire. She's cheap.
Up. I'm not cheap. No, I am. I'm
She's affordable. What? Speaking of mental health, which we were speaking of 12 to 14 minutes ago, so it still works to say. Speaking of. You know, what I think this is a redundant, obvious thing to say, but, you know, artists tend to struggle with a smidgen more mental health issues than a common person. And it can be romanticized, but it can also be really damaging. What kinds of tools and resources have you, you know, looked to or developed to manage, you know, your own mental health while you're trying to be creative?
Therapy.
Shout out therapy.
Talk therapy helps me a lot. I have been in it off and on since I was a teenager. I went through a period of time when I was very resistant to it in my 20s and bullheaded and thought I didn't need it anymore. I was wrong. Got myself back into some regular talk therapy. Trying to make sure that I stay active physically and in my body helps me a lot. Small amounts of psychedelic drugs helps
me a lot.
Very
tiny amounts. Do you want to talk about that?
Very tiny amounts.
You do microdosing.
I do microdose, yes. Microdosing psilocybin helps me a lot. I've been doing that at least 5 days a week now for 3 months.
Can you talk about what kind of effects it's had on you and your work?
It has lifted my depression significantly, and it also takes the edge off of my anxiety, which is pretty relentless, or has been at least in my life for a long time, to varying degrees. And it gives me a little bit of energy. I mean, it's a very small amount. They're capsules that I take, the powdered psilocybin and then chamomile and some other things like turmeric or whatever. It's a very small amount of psilocybin, but it's just enough to, it gives me a little bit of energy, but without the jittery. It's not like caffeine, you know, where you get manic or anything like that. And it just puts me into a space where I feel normal, where I feel like myself, where I'm not like without the weight of, you know, the black dog like sitting on my chest of depression. And then and also like the little squirrel of anxiety just like darting around in my head. It just kind of pushes those.
It's a lot of animals.
Yeah, I like animals. I like metaphors. I am a poet. Yeah.
So would you say the effect on your work has been more of a thing that because it removes these sort of impediments, you can create more freely? Or is it also a thing where it's made you creative in a different way?
I think that's still to be determined.
That's what the kids say.
It's gonna. I'll see how it plays out more in time. It definitely puts me in a better headspace for productivity and to be more open to let creative ideas flow through me rather than being super self-critical, self-loathing, fearful of failure, or all those lovely things that come with, you know, being dogged by depression and anxiety and stuff. It definitely clears a lot of that out, so I can just work and just let myself be. It has helped me tremendously.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. I recommend it.
You did bring me some.
I did.
I'll try it and I'll report back.
Yeah, you got to do that.
It's been a big week for me.
I know.
You brought me some mini mushrooms.
You met Dave Matthews.
I met Dave Matthews and he looked directly into my soul and he told me everything's going to be all right. Also, he introduces himself as David. Everybody, thank you very much, David Matthews. And I just feel like my whole life's about to change. That's all I'm saying.
It is. It is always changing.
Okay, we're going to enter the portion that I like to call the lightning round. Here's basically, I think, you know, as creatives, we all need, I don't know, we all find inspiration and heartening in all kinds of different places, like be it at a website or an article or a book or a documentary or, you know, a painting, a place. So I want to do a little shout out round of places that you, things, places, et cetera, that you would recommend that you've found solace or inspiration or, you know, just the will to go on through. Let's start with Film.
Wild at Heart.
Can you go on?
Wild at Heart, directed by David Lynch, starring Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern.
That's the right name.
It is aesthetically perfect. It is highly entertaining. It's dark enough to, you know, massage those little, you know, dark Night of the Soul tendencies that I have, or that lots of people have, while also being humorous. And it's a victorious story, a story of victory, of love overcoming all obstacles, such as crazy bitches and murder,
crazy bitches
and jail and plotting and a scheming and hitman and witchcraft. Bad kind, mean kind where they want to kill you kind.
Not the good kind.
Not the good kind. Or maybe it's good, but it's portrayed as bad in this film. All things are beaten.
That's enough spoilers.
Okay.
Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart. Great film.
Next. Album. Slash artist of music.
You think
musical artist.
Lightning. Cardi B, Invasion of Privacy.
See, like, did you even have to think about it?
No.
I could have answered it for you.
No. Yeah. Cardi B.
Speak on it.
Cardi B. She is a sex worker icon.
Fair.
And an icon in general, but specifically, I love everything she stands for. I am proud of her, and she inspires me, and I love her.
Okay. Drip, yeah. Drip.
Drip, drip.
Next up, a place.
The beach, but not like Daytona Beach. I'm talking like Cliffside Beach. It's quiet, secluded. You can hear the waves crashing. You can chill out, reset your brain.
Did you say not like Daytona Beach as if what you thought everyone's first?
Yeah, I'm from the Midwest, okay?
Daytona Beach.
When people in the Midwest think of beach, they think like, you know, movie beach, you know.
Movie
like,
beach is still not Daytona Beach. Daytona Beach has no place taking up the
don't
first
shame
ranking
me, Yossi.
I'm shaming Daytona Beach.
The beach.
There's nothing wrong with Daytona Beach.
There's nothing wrong,
like
with,
nothing
improv,
wrong with improv,
poetry,
or working
at Target.
Okay, next. Website.
The Creative Independent.
Shout out The Creative Independent.
Shout out.
which is truly just a better version of this podcast. I'll be real about it.
It's called Spade a Spade.
Shout out Brandon Stosi.
Brandon.
Officer and a gentleman.
The tree.
That, for those that don't know, it is a website with long-form interviews with all sorts of different kinds of artists and creative people, and it's truly wonderful.
Ad and sponsor free.
Ad and sponsor free. Okay, next. Book.
Letters to Fire by Anais Nin.
Why?
Because the way that she writes, which is in a kind of sort of collage, strange stream of consciousness, loosely esoteric, loosely erotic, loosely, you know, all the, it's something that
she's
resonates.
A little freak. She's a little freaky.
She's a freaky. She's freaky. And it resonates with me. And it's easy to read. It's not like you have to, you know, just, it's not super long and intense. And you don't, you know, you can just kind of pick a page and read for a passage for a while and find something, or for me, find something that is inspires me, or just kind of triggers a memory or an idea for something creative, or I find a lot of inspiration for visual art in her writing, actually. Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm. She's very descriptive in really esoteric, like painterly ways, I find.
Okay.
Yes.
Last is the et cetera round.
Okay.
Et cetera. Really anything.
Anything. Animals, having pets, having, I think it's really important to have a pet or connections with animals in some way. I think it grounds us as humans, and I think it's a good thing to have around you. Animals. Spending time cooking meals is really important, I think. I truly believe that cooking is an art form in and of itself. It's a great way to express yourself and express love and share and do nice things for other people and even just for yourself.
I can't believe that you would ramble this long on about this and not even mention
the salmon meal you made last
beautiful
night.
Beautiful meal oh, that so I good. Cooked for you.
Yasi made a beautiful meal for me last night. It was salmon and a very light pasta.
Seared, then roasted salmon.
It was delicious.
Pasta and garlic, white wine, red pepper flake sauce.
It was fantastic. It was a fire meal.
Sorry to interrupt.
So, yeah, cats and or animals, cooking meals. Scents. I think scents are really important.
Scent. Like smells?
Scent, like smells. Mm-hmm. Having... I'm really responsive to smell. And so I like to burn incense a lot. I like to make my own incense. I think it's really important to have things that you do with your hands, making things, little things.
Sure. Tactile practices.
Yes, tactile practices. I would recommend that.
Like making lanyards.
Yeah, anything, you know? Making macrame plant holders, whatever floats your boat. Play-Doh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last but not least, what's your favorite Dave Matthews Band song?
The Crash one.
Good answer.
Right?
Yeah.
Doo, 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 doo.
You got your bow, you got your chain. Thank you for being on the podcast, Heather.
Thank you for having me, Elsie.
Dig was recorded at the Ruby Studios in Los Angeles by the Wind Beneath My Wings, Sammy Junior. Our incredibly catchy theme song is by Heather Fortune. You can find more of Heather's music, none of which sounds like this, but is very goth and very good, at heatherfortune.bandcamp.com. heatherfortune.bandcamp.com. You can follow us at Dig the Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for listening.